then predetermined objectives. As you know, we've been reporting on predetermined objectives for the last 2 years in terms of the completion. And then on the last one is our IT auditors. We are engaging our IT auditors much more detail, and they will be focusing on the predetermined objectives. If you look at the supply chain, that's in terms of our approach. We started changing our approach to offering labels for the office. And we've seen that from last year, we've identified much more irregular things. So our focus for supply chain is firstly to make sure that the department adheres to the supply and that procurement is cost effective and efficient and done in a manner, in a fair manner. Then we will look at the contracts, the subsequent management of the contract. Do they actually receive the services that they agreed to? Do they pay the price that they've agreed to? So we will consider the project management after the tender has been signed. And we will also identify possible fraud indicators, which we will then communicate to management and those charged with governance to take further action and to include it as part of our risk. The objective of this approach that we're following is, as I said, to identify fraud risk indicators, to ensure that all irregular expenditure has been identified and disclosed, the completeness of irregular expenditure, and then also correct and consistent reporting of control weaknesses. You would remember in our audit report we do include internal control deficiencies, so if there's non-compliance we need to identify the root cause and the reason for that specific non-compliance. When we look at the sample for supply chain management, we will focus on findings of last year, the previous year, and we will do a follow-up on that. All awards for employees that has interest, so conflict of interest, identifying those employees through CIPRO, and then seeing what contract has been entered into, and then those will be included. All awards to possible fictitious suppliers. All awards to companies that have been liquidated. So if they enter into any agreement with a company that has been liquidated, we will include that into our sample. All awards that were registered within the past 12 months, so all significant tenders and contracts that have been entered into. All transactions not procured by means of the tender process, so where they've requested deviation, those will be selected. Where a supplier has more than one contract, so we will select at least two suppliers that have several contracts with the police to see, I mean, usually a supplier is focusing on one area. They will be an IT company or making clothes. So why would a company have five tenders, for instance? So we will identify those and we'll focus on them. And then at least two contracts awarded for construction projects that are significantly behind schedule. We have noted, I mean, in the past there were concerns about police stations not being completed on time, and that will also link to the project management, following up on that. So where contracts are behind, we will also focus on those. Then for predetermined objectives that we've reported in the past, we started 2004-05. In 2010-11, we will still not express a public opinion. The opinion will be in the management report, but deficiencies will be included in the audit report, as we did last year and the year before. Our approach is to understand the policies, the procedures, the systems that the police have in place to collect and to report on the performance information, and then understanding and testing of the systems and the controls from our side to ensure that it's consistent. Our audit criteria, there's basically three areas that we focus on. The first one, we know that National Treasury is giving the guidelines and they prescribe the format and when police need to submit what information. So that is our first focus area, is to make sure that what Treasury prescribed indeed exists. So they have reports, that those reports are in the format as prescribed by Treasury, and that those reports are being submitted to the relevant people, institutions, on a quarterly basis as prescribed by Treasury. We also look at the usefulness of the information, and that is specifically linking to the SMART principle. Is the objective specific? Is it measurable? Is it time-bound? So can we see what they need to do by when? If not, I mean, those information is not useful to the reader. And then the reliability directly links to availability of source documentation. If information is reported, can we take it back to supporting documentation to verify the accuracy of that? And on the other hand, completeness, can we go from source documentation and trace it back and see that that was included in the information that was reported in the annual report? So for the last point, we need the source documentation to verify accuracy and to verify completeness in terms of what the department report. The risk for predetermined objectives from an audit perspective is that not all supporting documentation is there, so they don't report completely, and that we also reported last year, is that police couldn't get supporting documentation in all instances, and that we couldn't conclude that the information is complete and accurate. And then specifically in terms of police, what we've identified is the lack of monitoring and review at the police station level, where information is captured but there's no process of properly monitoring and reviewing the accuracy and the consistency of the information. So as a result, that remains a higher risk for us when we do the audit for predetermined objectives. The next slide is just further on the approach. And then the focus areas from the team for 2010-11, we will audit all the indicators for program 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then the places and the provinces that we will visit, we'll visit the National Intervention Unit in Pretoria, Public Order Policing Service, the Forensic Science Lab, Criminal Record Center, the Crime Intelligence in KZN, Ports of Entry in Johannesburg, KZN, and Free State, and 24 police stations. And that these regional offices and venues, we will test the indicators and the completeness and the reliability, because that is where they will keep the source documentation and the information. And as I said, we also have a higher risk on IT, and specifically because of the higher focus on predetermined objectives, we did invite and we did request our IT auditors to do more work. They will specifically focus on the controls designed for CAS and OPAM, so that we can see whether we can place reliance on those systems. At the moment, they are weak in terms of business continuity plan that's not in place. They don't have IT overall policies and procedures to manage these systems. So their governance surrounding their IT systems, specifically the performance information system, is weak at the moment, and we have communicated that to the department. In addition, change management controls have been identified as a high risk. There's no follow-up of changes, password controls, there's no test to prevent unnecessary disruptions, incorrect changes, and unauthorized and inappropriate access. So basically it comes back to the entire governance structure and keeping the information in CAS and open secure that is not appropriate at this stage. And those are the three main areas of risk that we've identified for the 2010-11 audit. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much, ma'am. I will allow members to ask questions. It's quite an interesting presentation. Ms. Annelies, Ms. Kola Barnard, Ms. Honorable NG, Honorable Swate, Honorable Reverend Mishwe, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson Neil. Thanks for the presentation as well. I must say, personally, I'm glad that the focus areas are where they are, because I think these are the areas that we've raised concerns about as well. In terms of supply chain management, your slide on page 7, something that we found when we did the research around the buildings of police stations was the non-adherence to certain treasury requirements, and specifically around also the breaking down of a tender so that it comes in underneath the amount that would force them to go to a bid committee or would force them to get the quotes, etc. How are you going to, and from these I can't see, you know, that's included in one of the on these samples, as you said, but not limited to. Is it possible to add that, to look at that as well? And then I would also like to know on the issue of your samples that you are going to use, your stations, etc. What worries me a bit about these, first of all, I would like to know how did you arrive at these, and specifically around the 24 police stations as well. But secondly, the absence of headquarters as a sample, for me, is a bit of a concern. If you look at the issues that we've addressed last year, the problem lies within HQ. And that goes for buildings, but it also goes for some of the others, the IT environment, etc. Why aren't they included? And secondly, how did you arrive at these? And if you can maybe give us an indication, you don't have to mention the police stations, but just an indication of how they are, how they've been selected and where they are distributed according to them. That's all for the moment. Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, Chair, just one from me. You related many areas of fraud or multiple tenders being granted to a single individual entity, or short-circuiting of the tender processes and such that you may uncover. But when you uncover it, what then is the process? You said you hand it over to someone at the SAPS. Do you then sever your dealings in relation to that matter, or do you follow up on those matters to ensure that the SAPS has actually dealt with it and instituted criminal charges if needs be? You know, I need to know the mechanism that you have in place to ensure that that we have these issues that are simply pushed under the carpet year after year after year, as we have seen previously. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on, you made mention of some contracts are sometimes behind. What I want to know is, what do you do if a contract is behind? What do you do to address that? Do you leave it like that to say, oh yeah, it's behind and that's it? Or what do you do? And my other question is on the, you made mention of the previous financial year, we did not get supporting documents. What happened then, ever since you didn't get the supporting documents? Is there a way you recover them even after, or is it an issue of no, you don't have them and that is what happens thereafter? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm actually also wanting to ask a question of clarity with regard to supply chain management, your approach. You indicating here that you are having an approach, but mine is actually your approach on with regard to the transparency and competitive procurement that if the department has adhered to. So I just want to find out that if you do find out that actually this requirements were not adhered to, what actually are you doing after actually finding out that there is this actually they didn't comply. And on the other hand, you also in talk of management to check the management of the contract and the payment. Because in the previous, you also indicated that there are some of the payments that have been paid late, some of them they haven't been paid. So some of these things actually, as long as we don't know what action is being taken, this might also continue. So I just want to know the approach, because you're saying that the approach is to check, but after finding out what is the Auditor General doing to make sure that those things do not continue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask three questions about the teeth of the Office of the Auditor General. How sharp they are, or how blunt they are. My first question, relating to what the Honorable NG said, is when there is no documentation that is supplied, can you force, can you demand to have that documentation? Or what can you do about it? Is it the matter of just reporting, I couldn't find any documentation in the answer? And secondly, about the contract. You look at the contract, if I heard you correctly, after the assignment. Now, if you discover irregularities and the contracts have already been signed, is there any intervention that can take place to correct what has been maybe wrong? And the third one about if a company has been offered tenders fraudulently and it comes to your attention, are you able to intervene at what stage? If not, is it just a matter of putting it on record that processes have not been followed and the company that has been, the decision has not been cost effective? Because the company maybe that got the tender has been the most expensive, but because of connections, they got it. Is there anything you can do? Or whether there's nothing you can do? And if the answer is there's nothing you can do, who did help if you had sharper teeth? You can say, this is wrong, I'm going to do something about it. Thank you.
My question is about my assistant, Madam Chair, on the issue of the supporting documents. So I don't want to repeat that. But I just want to ask the auditor, if they feel my question is out of order, I will not be disappointed. You see, there is a perception that there's too much corruption in the police service. But especially supply chain management, forensic laboratory, and all that. But the auditors, every year they give them what one call unqualified policy. I just want to know, are they happy with that? You see, everybody believes that there's corruption in this department. They, the auditors, because it doesn't matter how you can put it technically. But once a department has got an unqualified audit report, to an ordinary person on the ground, it indicates that that department is run properly, the accounting processes are properly followed. That's only to know from them. How do they feel about this contradiction? They also don't believe that there's nothing, or they believe that there's nothing wrong with the police.
Thanks, I'm happy also to be with the Auditor General. I see you are completing your 100th year, and that is remarkable. You are the Auditor General, not only of police, but I think of the entire public service, the department. See, prevention, you're talking about fraud. Not reserving documentation. But I think prevention is better than cure. What are you doing in that regard as the Auditor General? Do you have mechanisms in place so that these things are not being perpetuated for the next 100 years? Thanks.
Jefferson, sorry, two further questions I just want to ask. The first one is on the issue of awards to employees. How are you going to determine that? Because, I mean, it's only since this year that I think directors also have to declare interest in firms. So how are you going to determine that? But then the other question that I have is in terms of when we look at supply chain management, over and above how contracts are received and how goods are purchased, is the question of how it's distributed. In this morning's papers, there's again a report about more than 100 vehicles standing at a police station in Bloemspruit. I think that's in the Free State, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere there, that have not been distributed, hundreds of vehicles, Ford Ranger bockies and things. So the question is, once these things have been purchased, how do we, do you follow up, or is it not your role to follow up the distribution of it? Because I think, you know, buying is one thing, distributing is another. And I mean, it's the issue of bulletproof vests has been an issue over the years as well, and we've now reached a point where they acknowledge that, so they don't know exactly how many bulletproof vests there are. The loss of firearms is another example of that. So for me, it's also the issue about once goods and services have been acquired, the distribution process itself. Then, Chairperson, last question, and on the running the risk of sounding like a stuck record, the issue of vehemence. We've raised that issue last year as well. We've raised it yesterday with the FFC as well. But it is in the adjustment appropriation of this year, there's clear indications that SAP have violated vehement rules, not in terms of the amount, not in terms of the percentage, but vehements from capital works to its salaries. And I think we asked the question yesterday to the FSC as well, consequences. I think that becomes very important to us, is the issue of consequences. And I think that's the questions that members are raising as well. What are the consequences? Because these are issues that have been coming over many years. It's not as if it's something that happens over the last year or so. Many of these issues have been issues that have been raised over and over again. So, you know, I think it goes to the question of Mr. George as well in terms of teeth. You know, what are the consequences of these acts? Because, I mean, this is actually contrary not only to regulations, but to the PFMA Act. So what are the consequences of this?
Thank you very much. Page 13, your focus areas of predetermined objectives. I just want to show, because down there you said national intervention, you need public order, policing and so on. Are you going to include IT? Is it included in that? Because together with that, I would then ask the question on supply chain management, page 7, that are you also going to focus on contracts that are awarded, probably correctly so or wrongly so, but that are duplicating services? Just citing an example, you have PKM now awarded the contract, but you also have CETA. It's PKM, it's CETA, almost doing the same thing. Are you going to probably check on who are the directors of some of these companies that are awarded? Because what is happening in SAPS is that a person is a SAPS member today, he resigns, she resigns, she comes back, she's now a contractor or a service provider. In SAPS, it's a trend, it's a way of life. Somebody who you were paying 20,000 rand, she comes or he comes back being a service provider, you have to multiply that by 10 or 15 or 20 to one person. I'm going to check on all those things. I also want to know, SAPS have, if I'm not mistaken, about 1,003 leases. I'm going to check on all those things. Leases. Who is the owner, from where and from when, for how long? Who's been awarding those leases to people and so on and so forth? I'm going to check all those things because I think we will definitely be interested. We're looking forward to the report that will come out of this. In fact, it will definitely be exciting. And my last question is, as you do your work and you discover that probably there is corruption, but it dates back to 1999, what are you going to do? Because you said you'll be focusing on this. In fact, you have, it is alleged that you have people who own farms that they never purchased. It's sad that they've been using money for the state and doing it so correctly and so on. How are you going to deal with that, where corruption, yes, you can identify it now, but it dates back to 19 whatever, and probably a person has resigned or probably a person has come back as a service provider. Very interesting. This one will definitely be interesting. We'll be waiting for the outcome of your work this time around more than we have in the past. And we believe really that it's going to assist us a great deal. It's going to unearth some of the problems that from a distance you can actually see that, but there are problems there. But who can go in there and begin to unearth some of these problems? Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. In terms of the sample, we can send you the sample of the 24 stations that we selected. In terms of our approach, the sample must be representative, so it will be in different areas, bigger, smaller, rural. So it must be representative for us to draw a conclusion in terms of the entire population. So I'm willing, and we can send you the list of stations.
On that issue, the question that I have in my mind, because, and I raised this question because of how you explained to us last year you do samples, was SAPS involved in determining those samples, or are these simply your samples that you're taking?
No, SAPS is not involved in the sample because, I mean, we need to draw an independent sample, so we can't go to them and say, where do you want us to go, or is it fine for us to go here? It is our independent sample that we draw so that we can express an opinion on the population. Headquarters, the 24 and those are specifically in terms of the predetermined objectives. So we don't do 100% of everything. And for that reason, most of the information is outside. I can just confirm, but this is the list that I've received where we will focus in terms of predetermined objectives. Obviously, we do a lot of work at headquarters in terms of the daily financial activities and transactions because that is where they keep the information. But in terms of predetermined objectives, I don't have that on my list at the moment. You said that the concern was specifically in terms of IT.
IT.
Yeah. Maybe I can just mention, currently the office is busy with a performance audit on contractors and consultants. Police is also there, and I know there's a lot of focus on IT. The report should be finished by end of March, the draft report, and the intention is that it will be tabled before we finalize our regularity report. So there is a lot of detail and a lot of focus. And the difference between performance audit and regularity audit, we work on a sample. Our intention is to express an opinion on the financial statements. So we cannot go in and do 100% testing on every transaction. Compared to performance audit, where they have a specific theme and the focus area, where that focus area was consultants. So they've identified consultants, contractors, and they've went back and they did everything, the entire process, all the transactions relating to those specific service providers. So they are more focused and more detailed, and IT is definitely included there. The distribution of police stations, I've mentioned that. The process when we identify findings of communication, we will discuss it, obviously, first where we identify it. If we cannot get supporting documentation or information to satisfy, we will go to accounting officer. We have meetings with the minister. We include it there. But at the end of the day, we are not in a position to keep people accountable. We can only report. So if we identify irregular expenditure and it hasn't been included in the financial statements, we will communicate it to them. But they have then an option either to include it and to disclose it as irregular expenditure, or we will then qualify. In the case of police, where we've identified irregular expenditure, they have disclosed it. And as a result, we say that that statement is a fair presentation, and that as a result, we don't qualify. So that's why you have seen the unqualified. They don't have a clean report. They have an unqualified. And what we say with that is the financial statement is a materially fair presentation of the activities throughout the year.
That's the question I'm asking. I just want to understand. Are you saying, you say they have explained, they've done something wrong, they've explained, and therefore because they've explained, you give them what you call a fair? What I'm saying, how many times do you do that? If every time they come to you, it's like a thief, every time you catch it, they say, no, I'm sorry, I will not steal again, but I will not deny that I stole it. So you say, we are a good thief, get away. Then the next year, the thief comes again and still you catch it. You say, no, I'm sorry. Surely this is the last time. I'm thinking, is that what you're saying? Because I just want to understand, because you say, whenever you confront them with information of irregularity, they
put it in annual report.
Yeah, and then you, because of that, you do nothing about it. That's what I understand.
Yeah, they did a bit more than. They did a bit more than explain. They disclosed that information. Once again, I'm saying that as an auditor, I'm not there to keep them accountable. My responsibility is to report, and they've included it and they disclosed it in the financial statements. We included the emphasis of matter to draw readers' attention to the fact that there's irregular expenditure. But it is for the minister, the accounting officer, portfolio committee, SCOPA, to keep these people then accountable, and to if there's reoccurrence. I'm not in a position to lay charges or to... We don't have the same powers than the public protector. My only mandate is to report on the information that they present. Yeah, so we can't prosecute, we can't do anything of that sort. Yes, but there's different role players within government, and our role is to enable those who have the thief with the information, and then to say, but these have been reoccurring year after year, and what are we going to do about it? So yes, I think everybody needs to play the role, and what information there is needs then to be used to take further action. When we look at the contracts that's behind, once again, we look from it out of a financial perspective. What is the financial implication? Is there now escalation in fees that might be regarded as irregular expenditure? So we look at the financial implication of that, and whether that implication is then being disclosed and reported.
And when you find it's not being disclosed, because we can tell you that it's not being disclosed. I mean, the research, and I think we must give the research report to, and the committee report that went to Parliament, to the auditor's office. where we've clearly indicated that there are buildings with 40% and more, 140% increases because of not completing businesses, 200%, and it's not reported, it's nowhere reported. Where a 14 million rand police station will end up costing 40 million rand, and it's not disclosed.
I'll appreciate that. If we can get that report, it will be... Because we work on a risk base. I mean, if we have this information, obviously our risk increase, and we do more work, and we focus on different areas. So if we can have that information, I'll really appreciate that. Thanks. Supporting documentation for performance information not being submitted. We've asked for it. We've asked for it at the highest level. If they cannot submit it, we report it, and then we say to the reader, the information included in the annual report is not reliable because we couldn't get supporting documentation. So we're giving that content to the reader to say, you can't just read and accept what is in this report. There was a limitation. We couldn't verify the accuracy and the completeness of this information. But we can't force them to give it to us. We ask it, we communicate, but I can't go there and say, you have to. It is always that they know and they have the option to and the obligation to provide it. If they can't provide it, then my responsibility is to report it, to say that they couldn't provide me with the information. I know with the performance information, the CAS system, it has a problem in terms of it's a real-time system. So if they don't draw a report and information as at 31st March, when we do the audit in June, or whenever we do the audit, they can't go back and tell us exactly what was the status as at 31st March. And that is one of the biggest weaknesses in the system at this stage as well. So we can't go back, and as a result, they can't give us that information, or we can't test from there to the documentation to test that reliability, because we don't know what was there at 31st March. I think we spoke about the transparency and then the what then for us in terms of communicating for them to include in the financial statements and for them to disclose, or otherwise we will disclose. I said we can't force them. We focus on the contract after it was signed. This is one of the changes we had in our approach. In the past, we focused on we selected contracts and then we audited the transactions. Now we're changing it. When we test goods and services, we will go back to the contract as well. So then we will go back in the past. And if then we see that that contract hasn't been followed and there was non-compliance, the entire amount for that contract will be regarded as irregular. And that is a major change in terms of our approach. Then it comes to the question, yes, there's unqualified, and are we then satisfied that it's unqualified year after year? As I said, we work on a risk base and we audit that, and it will be a qualification if it exceeds our materiality framework, because that will impact the decision of the readers. But through the changes in our audit approach, through the changes in our focus area, identifying the risk, we do realize that there is more that we need to look at. And that's why as an office, and this is not just in police, it is government-wide, where we realize supply chain is a very high risk and we need to put more focus. So yes, we continuously trying to enhance and put the focus on the right places. There was a question in terms of employees and employees leaving. What we do there is we have access to the Cipro database, and with our IT auditors, we draw, we do CAT procedures, computer procedures, to match ID numbers and to match employees so that we can identify them. And obviously, if they are identified, then it will be reported and included, because there's a process where they either have to disclose their relationship, where if a person is involved, they had to excuse them from the process of awarding a tender or a bid. And then we will follow up to see, was there a proper process to still make sure that the procurement was fair, equitable, and transparent, and not the person with the interest making the decision. So we do have techniques that we are starting to apply and that we're applying to identify that. The challenge for us comes in terms of friends, because it's easy to identify the ID. To an extent, we can look at the spouses. But when we look at related parties and interests, it also includes close friends. And that is where we still have a challenge to say, but where do we get that information? That's not that easy. I agree, prevention is better than to cure. And from our side, we engage in our visibility, in making sure that we have more regular interactions with ministers, with accounting officers, with yourself, so that as we move and as we work throughout the year and we identify risk, we can bring it to those charts of governance to their attention. We have more interaction with the audit committees, so that the oversight bodies can then intervene. So our role and how we see our role and how we can still stay independent and within our mandate is to give the information and to then encourage those who can to take action and then to improve the controls to ensure that there's prevention. I forgot to mention that the firearms is also one of our top risks at this stage, because we are looking at the registers, the safeguarding, and all of those. So that has also been identified as one of our risks, is the loss of firearms. Together with that is also the licensing of private-owned firearms. We've also identified that process as in terms of compliance, and do the police comply with the Act in what they need to do and the process. When we look at distribution of assets, we don't really follow the process through from when it was procured, paid for, and distributed. We will pick it up when we do asset verification at year end, and then we see, well, these assets that's been procured 6 months back but not being distributed. If we identify that, it will be raised as a finding to say that we see these assets have been procured, and then we will usually ask the question then, why shouldn't it be regarded as fruitless, and what is the impact on service delivery? But we'll do that at year end with the asset verification, and once again we do it on a sample basis. We don't go through the entire asset register. Duplicating services and the contracts there, that is not really, we don't go out in terms of service delivery and then select transactions to verify financial payments. So that's not really a focus area for us, to take it from service delivery and then to see if there's two companies or three companies delivering the same service. Our point is from the, we select from where the tender was or the process was advertised, and then we take it through to where a tender has been awarded. And that might be a weakness in terms of our system, where we also need to look at that in terms of following it from a different side. So we'll take that up and see if we can work something in there. Leases, we do audit the leases and on an annual basis. I'm not sure if we confirm, especially the existing leases, the owners, and that is also something that I will take back to say that we need to enhance that. That for those leases that we do audit, we go back to see if there's any relation with the owner. Okay, so we'll definitely include that as well. The environment, yes. The consequences, if they use capital for salaries, that will result in unauthorized expenditure, because they can't. I mean, capital expenditure cannot be used for any other purpose than capital. So if they move that, then they will exceed the allocation for employee costs. And I'll also make sure that we follow up on that, because I haven't, well, obviously we only audit vitamins when we get the financial statements, when we see the final movement. But we'll definitely make sure to see if there is capital expenditure that has been moved to pay operation or current expenses. I don't know if there's anything that I specifically left out. I know there was a lot in terms of what can we do and the repetition, but the answer is going to stay the same in terms of that we report and we try to report it timeously, so that those who can do something about it then intervene.
IT system, is it your focus area or IT?
IT is a focus. There is work on the systems itself from our IT auditors, and then as I mentioned, the performance audit focused a lot on IT contracts, where contractors and consultants is being used.
Thanks for your response to my question. I need to check your impartiality in dealing with all these irregular, unauthorized. Can you be influenced in carrying out your mandate? I need to check on your impartiality. It's very, very important to me, because you.
I must ask, please, to question the credibility of the Auditor General, I'm sorry, we have to please ask for that to be withdrawn. I can't. I'm very embarrassed by that question.
Can I be protected, Chair?
I would request that we withdraw the question. This is a Chapter 9 institution, independent, and it would really be unfortunate if we can in any way indicate that we can doubt their independence at all. So yes, I will think that we shouldn't go ahead with the question. Honourable Craig.
Chair, firstly, I must apologise. I was late earlier on, but I just want to say as well, there's been some off the cuff remarks that have been made here today as well about the AG's office being toothless, etc. And I think we must be very cautious about the statements we make. I agree with what you've said. The Auditor General's office has a very specific role to play. It has a specific mandate. There are institutions and bodies here in Parliament that deal with the Auditor General's report, including the Public Accounts Committee. So I agree with what you said now, but I also think we must be very careful about the kind of statements that we make, whether they be as actual questions or off-the-cuff remarks. Thanks.
My question that I wanted to raise is I hear in terms of what the presenter said in terms of reporting to the accounting officer, to the minister, and to the necessary bodies. But I'm wondering, Chairperson, whether it's not possible that we can, as a committee, also be alerted when things are picked up. Because in the end, we are the committee that must keep them ultimately accountable, from the accounting officer, the minister, everybody. And I would really request that if something is picked up, that we don't have to wait for the annual report or for 8 months after the fact that something is wrong, but that we can improve interaction between the Auditor General's office and our own committee as well. Just a request from my side.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will welcome that and be more than willing to share. We at the moment, we're busy with our interim audit. But as soon as we're done with the interim audit, we can come down and share with you the most significant findings and the risks that we've identified there. That should be towards the end of March, beginning of April.
Do you want to say anything about to close this session? Because I think members no longer have questions.
No, thank you. If I addressed all the questions, I don't have anything else to add. I'll appreciate the report that was indicated. And yes, we stay with our commitment to say that we're here to assist the committee, and we are more than willing to come down and to assist where we can, so that we can also enable this committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We always appreciate your availability all the time to come and assist us as we engage with the department, so that we are more sharper and we can ask those questions. And I can imagine, you know, members are asking if you can do this, you can do that, and so on, teeth and so on. I'm imagining your frustrations as well after you have reported these are the shortcomings, and you are expecting us to hold the department accountable, and we don't do it. I can imagine how frustrating it must be for you after the whole work that you do, and you put everything on the table for us to use, holding the department accountable and saying you cannot move 1, 2, 3 because we have those powers, and we still don't do it because you're not using your information adequately. I'm imagining it surely must be frustrating on your side. And then you come and appear before us, then you say, tell us, why are you not doing this? Then you're actually saying, no, but why are you not using our information? So it's that, but we really are appreciating your inputs, and we definitely will be inviting you again to come and brief us on whatever that is available to you that you think you should share with us. We will, if possible, I'm not saying do it, we would appreciate if you could include HQ. If you could include HQ, we would appreciate it. But of course, we can't dictate to you. But we would really appreciate that, because we believe that maybe if we have time this year as this portfolio committee, we'll also want to focus on HQ. And the combined effort and approach would probably come up with some better outcome. And that will also be appreciated by ourselves. We will be meeting the department, I think, the other week, last week of March. They will be presenting their budget. The information that is here with us now will help us to focus on some areas and to listen carefully on what they're saying. And thank you very, very much for always accepting our invitations, and we really value your work and your inputs, and thank you very much. I think we are going to take a short break, 15 minutes break. We'll then come back and do our report. We will be emailing the report that we referred to and any other information that we think you might need in that regard, because I think we all over and above have a report that we compiled, but we probably might have other information that you might want to use. And we'll be doing that after today or after this meeting. Thank you very, very much.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Yeah.